ونبينا بالقاسم محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. فقد قال الله في محكم كتابه: والذين آمنوا بالله ورسوله أولئك هم الصديقون والشهداء عند ربهم لهم أجرهم ونورهم والذين كفروا وكذبوا بآياتنا أولئك أصحاب الجحيم. That those who believe in Allah and His Messenger, they are the truthful ones, and they are the witnesses with their Lord. And for them is a reward and a light. And those who disbelieve and lie to His signs, they are the companions of the fire. My speech today is going to be about Imam Hussein and revolution. We have our Imam, who was the third Imam, and I think that it's impossible to speak about this particular Imam without speaking about the concept of revolution, which is the concept of making a change. That a change happens when something has gone wrong or something isn't working anymore. Sometimes you try something and then after you try it, and after a while it stops working. So you realize that you have to make some sort of change to get the result that you want. And the thing is that change isn't easy. Change is hard. Change takes determination. Change takes struggle. Change takes patience. But there's always the people who are going to be opposed to the change, and there's always going to be the people who are with the change. And that our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi, he's the first person in the Arabian Peninsula who brought a serious change to the people who were there. That he came at a time when the people were lost. They had lost the message of the prophets who had come before, Prophet Ibrahim, Prophet Nuh, Prophet Saleh. Other prophets had come before in that area, calling people to Allah, calling people to Tawheed, calling people to justice, calling people to fairness. But bit by bit, these people had lost that. They had started to lose the manners and the morals and things like that they had. And it was like wandering from the light into the darkness, because they had lost the light of the prophets that had come before. So then Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi, he came at this time, and he brought a change to the people. And it wasn't a change that they appreciated. It wasn't a change that they liked. It was for them. He was bringing something for them. He was trying to help them, but they didn't appreciate it. They didn't see the benefit in what he was trying to do. Because change, as I told you, change is hard. So he struggled with them and tried with them for years until finally he brought them to that first step of the change, which is that stop worshiping idols, and he brought them the basics of what they were going to need to know, which was justice, which was fairness, which was freedom, which is rights for all humanity. He brought them those things. Then after the Prophet brought them those things, the people fell back into their old habits a little bit. They brought the first step, which was Tawheed. They didn't start worshiping idols again. They stayed with the ideas of justice to some extent, but it hadn't completely settled in their minds and in their bodies. It had sort of just was like sort of on the surface and hadn't really quite sunk in to the whole entire populace. It was on the surface, that this idea that what we were doing is wrong. They realized that it was wrong. And then they started slowly but surely doing the same thing again. They started drifting back a little, sliding back into their old ways, which was injustice, not being fair, having haves and have-nots, whereas Islam tries to bring you a system where everybody is equal. That they have that all men are equal under the law. All everyone is equal before Allah. That all of us, no matter who we are, let's say that one person is rich and from a good family. Another person is from a good tribe. Another person is, from a poor family. Another person is from each person has their own background. One person was born Muslim. One person was raised Muslim. One person became Muslim. That But Islam, but Allah says that no, justice and equality and the rules are for everyone. That they all, that these rules apply equally to everyone. If we're handing out money on the basis of Islam, everyone gets the same share. If we're applying laws on the basis of Islam, rich or poor, powerful or weak, everyone gets punished the same way. So we all have the same justice and we don't have exceptions, that one person has a special set of rules for him. But what had started to happen, bit by bit, the Muslims fell out of that. They started to have the concept of no, haves, have-nots. The rules are applied to one group of people severely and then not applied to another group of people. We have certain families, they get more money and the whole government is for them and tries to work for their benefit. But then other people, they're not important. Maybe they're, at that time, they were Iranis, or maybe they were Africans, or maybe they were, you know, Turks. And they said, no, we're going to work and help and try and struggle for Arabs, but if you're not Arab, sorry, it's not your, you know, you have to wait for the next boat. So these type of things had crept in after the Prophet's death. And Imam Ali tried to make change, but the people hadn't fully realized the consequences of if you don't make this change now, it's going to get worse later. What's the saying go? There's a saying about that. No, not that one. That's the problem. That's a hadith. There's one about a ounce of something and it saves a pound. I can't remember it though.
An ounce of prevention is a
pound of cure. Yeah, an ounce of prevention is a pound of cure. Had they taken the opportunity and been steadfast with Imam Ali alayhi salam, then they wouldn't have to have a situation where you have to choose between, you know, Yazid and Hussein. You know, you could take the loss now, take a little bit now, go through a little suffering, and then you don't get that serious pain and stuff like that. You have the serious change now. It's like when you, if you have a child, if you tell him and then he does what you say, then you don't have to, you know, one day you have to take him out back maybe with the belt and, you know, take care of the problem. If you just listen, you know, or if you listen to him, maybe a minor point, maybe you send him to the corner first, you know, maybe you take away some toys. Maybe you take away some privileges. But then maybe bit by bit he doesn't want to listen to the easier, you know, punishments. Those don't affect him. So then you have to work on something which is more painful. So this is how the community was. That when Imam Ali tried to come and he tried to correct them, they didn't listen to that. So finally they got themselves into a situation where they had to choose with Yazid, and it was a much more painful situation for them. So Imam Hussein was bringing change, which is similar to the concept of revolution. That when we're going to make a serious change of what's going on. And the change which they were going to do, which Imam Hussein was trying to make sure that they didn't slide into, which is the complete divorce of the government from the religion. That the government, which was originally claiming to be a religious government, was going to just drop that. And then also, not only were they going to leave the religion, they were going to say that the religious people had to follow them. And Imam Hussein was in the position to the people, they said he was like a proof of the religion for them. Because he was their spiritual leader of the people at the time. Because he was the son of the Prophet. He was the son of Imam Ali. That he was a knowledgeable scholar. So people felt that if Imam Hussein does this, then that means he wouldn't do something wrong. So that means it must be right. And they could use it as a proof forever. Forever. They could say that, look, Imam Hussein didn't revolt against Yazid. So what right do you have to stand up to me when I want to do, you know, anything worse than that? If I want to change, I want to bring an idol into the Kaaba again, then you said Yazid, he didn't stop Yazid when Yazid was drinking and doing this and that and the other. So Imam Hussein came for that mission, that he was going to have Islah. And Islah is like change, revolution. And that he was going to bring back this concept, first of all, of bringing back the religion and morality in government. That the government had to rule in a way which was moral. That as long as the people stayed with that, we're going to be moral, then maybe he could give them an exception and do taqiyya or something like that. But if they were going to openly defy Allah, and openly do disobey and openly not even try and put any sort of guise on it that we follow Allah, then Imam Hussein said, no, at this point, the religious people, and this is also sets an example for us, that we don't, that at certain points, we can't even do taqiyya. This is an interesting also lesson, that taqiyya isn't just the cure-all, end-all solution from now till Yawm al-Qiyamah. No matter what's going on, you're going to do taqiyya. They're doing this, they're killing and murdering people, we're going to do taqiyya. They're doing this, they're burn down the Kaaba, we're still doing taqiyya. No, it's not just a one-size-fits-all solution. There are certain moments when it's individual, like, I'm not going to put my individual life on the line because someone said, I have a gun, are you Muslim or not? I can, you know, leave that. But if Islam itself becomes in danger, and they're going to be like, there's no more morality in religion, there's no more morality in government, then no. And also people are going to look at me and say that because he did this, then that means it's okay. We can't let that slide. We can't let that pass. The other thing, which I think a lot of people don't realize that Imam Hussein also was standing up for, which is the concept of justice, which I just said, that this uniformity amongst the Muslims, that each one of them is equal under the Islamic law, was another important thing that he was standing up for. Besides just that, bring the religion back and make it moral, also that the Muslims would be treated fairly. Because a lot of Imam Hussein's sympathy, if you read the books, came from the non-Arab areas. Because these people had felt like, we went over, we became Muslims, we learned about Islam, and now we're still being treated badly. That the other Muslims who feel that they have some sort of superiority to us, and that they were so there was a great deal of anger coming from these communities because they were left out. They said that when Imam Ali alayhi salam, when he was giving out his ratib, the, what do they call it in English? They say ata in Arabic. In English? The salary, yeah, the salary. So he was giving out the salary, and all of the leaders were used to getting these like big salaries. If you're the head of a tribe and sheikh, a qabila and stuff like that, then you would get a big salary. And then, you know, the slaves and stuff, they didn't get anything. So one of his cousins came, and, you know, leader of a tribe, you know, a distinguished gentleman, he gave him, you know, 2 dirhams or dinars, and he gave his slave also 2. And he was like, you made an equality with us? And he was like, this is Islam. I'm giving you on the basis of your faith. I'm not giving you on the basis of you're a good person. Allah's going to give you more. But in the dunya, no, you get the same. So Imam Hussein was standing up for this particular brand of government that wasn't popular with the leaders. And the thing is that this also shows that to have a revolution, you also have to have the rich and the powerful, of course, are always going to be against any system that works against them. But the weaker people have to have sense and not just follow and not be like apathetic about it. That when the rich people want to do some oppression to them, that they just sit there and either not do anything or not understand, or they can't be like that. They have to be aware of what's going on around them. And then if they are aware, then there can be a revolution. If not, then they just get oppressed some more. And they also have to be willing to stand up for their beliefs and have some sort of, like, you have to have a backbone. That one leader said that if you're not willing to die for it, then put freedom out of your vocabulary. Sometimes they say, if you're not willing to stand up for it, put freedom out of your vocabulary. This is Malcolm X who said these things. Meaning that you have to have some sort of spine. You have to have some sort of, you know, strength. That, for instance, that freedom and justice are principles that we're going to stand up for. And we can see this from the ayat that I just read. And also we can see this from the example of Imam Hussein. That you have to be willing at some point that we have principles. There are some things we're not going to back down over. And then that pushes it to that next step. And if you want to have a successful revolution, one that actually achieves its goals in the lifetime of its founders, then the other people have to stand up with the leader, not just let the leader stand up by himself and say, look, these are my principles and I'm going to stand up, and then the other people sit and watch. You know? That they have to go over and stand up too, and not let him stick his neck out. No, he's sticking his neck out for you. If he wanted, he could have been one of the haves. But he said, no, I'm going to stand up for the have-nots. And so the have-nots, like Imam Hussein stood up for them, so they have to stand up for him. So if you have a leader and you have a revolution, then you have to stand up with your leader. The next thing is that it is very important that you have to have some sort of resistance to what the oppressors would have done. You can't have the people just sit there, and when they're oppressed, they just sit there and say, oppress me some more. You can't have the idea that some people say, well, I'll just explain it to them and then it'll go away. The thing about oppressors is that they want to take your rights. It's not that they're confused and they think that your rights are really theirs. That's, like, for instance, I think, is this my car or is this your car? And I go and I show you that the back of the license plate, no, it's, you know, CRR51, that's mine, and yours is, no, yours is a similar number, similar color, but this isn't really yours. That's an explanation. But if I take it by force, then you have to stand up for oppression. You can't just say, oh, well, you know, there has to be that sort of thing, that you have to have that sort of strength. You have to go and you have to do something, unless you just want to keep being oppressed. And you have to say, we will do what it takes, not just, you know, we're going to explain our position. Yeah, you explain your position. You try that first. That's always the first option. You explain your position. You say your position. You try to convince the other side. You try and convince other people around. But at some point, you have to say that I'm not going to let this just keep going on, and I'm not just going to sit here and not care. Another thing is that you have to have a religion and a religious and moral backing of what you want to do. You have to be a person who is a moral person to stand up. If you're immoral, then you'll get bought off. Or if you have immoral leaders, then they'll get bought off. They'll go over and then they'll say, let's stand up for oppression. Okay, everybody gather around. I'm standing up for oppression. I go out and I try and do something. And then just as easily, the leaders get bought off, or the followers get bought off, or they get threatened or something like that, and they leave the cause. That you can't have leaders like that, and you can't have followers like that. That one of the important things is to have that deep moral strength amongst your leaders and also amongst the followers, that it makes your revolution or something like that stronger. Some people said, well, can't we just have, you know, some sort of, like, for instance, we'll just have Black Pride, or we'll just have Arab Pride, or we'll just have, I don't know, Pakistani Pride, and just try to stand up for that alone. But the thing is this, that tends to be that we're not standing up for a higher goal. I'm angry because I'm oppressed, not that I'm angry about oppression. If you have something that's not religion, it becomes personal. So then he'll say, okay, you're standing up, all right. How much do you want? You're like, I want, you know, I think I deserve 20 acres, or what is it, 40 acres, I'm sorry, and a mule. He gives you 40 acres. No, you give up the mislead your people, and I'll give you 550 acres, and I'll give you 100, you know, not even mules, I'll give you stallions. Then you go and sell out your whole cause. And that's happened before. We've seen countless revolutions sold down the river by, you know, the leader of the gets bought off. Or they buy off other people in the revolution, like we saw in Palestine and stuff like that. They would go over and buy off the other people, and their cousins or brothers or friends would ever put bombs in their own cars. Take care of the problem. If you don't have that deeper understanding of what you're doing and that higher goal amongst, like, the, especially amongst the leadership group, and then also to a certain degree amongst the followership group. They also have to be aware of what's going on. They have to understand. They have to understand the nature of their enemy, and also understand their own goals and what they want. The next thing is also that when a group stand up, they also have to be fearless, and they have to be willing to go through a few things, which is they have to be brave. That's one thing that people like to take away. They want to take away the bravery of the people. They want the people to be scared of them. And they'll threaten you. Any sort of oppressor will threaten you. we have with Imam Hussein that they threatened a lot of the his followers in like Kufa and stuff like that. They would get threatened, some would run away. The other ones, they would get bought off. So you have, when you can read this story, when you learn about Imam Hussein, that to do anything, then you have to have that sort of thing. You have to be fearless. You have to be willing to take an extra, to go an extra mile and not give up. The next thing is you need sacrifice. If you have a revolution, if you want to do something big, this can't be done without sacrifice. You have to be willing to lose something. Maybe it's a little house in the hills or something like that. It was really, you know, when I was reading about some other different people, they would try to do something, and they would sell out the revolution to protect their own house. And maybe their house is just a little wooden shack in the bushes, but to protect that, they'll sell out everyone. You have to be willing that, for instance, we're going to make whatever sacrifices need to be made, and we're not gonna let that stop us. Because we see from Imam Hussein that, what did he sacrifice? First of all, he was in the safety of Medina. He was in his hometown. So he left. He was willing to sacrifice his place. Some people aren't willing to move. He was willing to sacrifice. He moved. He went to Mecca. He was willing to sacrifice his money. That, for instance, maybe when he moved, maybe they seize his property or something like that. He was willing to sacrifice friends and family members. And he was willing to sacrifice himself for the cause. But the thing is that it's great that Imam Hussein was willing to do that, but the other people have to be willing to do it too. Like, okay, Imam Hussein, you go out there and you sacrifice all that stuff and we're going to sit here. If you take that attitude, if that's your attitude, that you look at your imam as just somebody who's going to, he goes over and does everything and we sit and watch, then we have to look at the people of Musa. That when he wanted to go and he was like, look, we have to go over, we have to free this land from these unbelievers. Then they were like, you and your brother go. We'll wait. That was their attitude. The imam is there to guide you. He's already guided. He's not doing this because he wants money or he wants power or something like that. He could have went over and made a deal with the Bani Umayyah. If he just wanted to be powerful, he could have walked over to Yazid and been like, look, we're cousins. We're, I'll give up my claim. You just give me the governorship of Egypt or something like that. I mean, if he wanted money and power, if he just wanted those type of goals, he could have just went, give me Iran. Like, if they're offering Omar bin Saad to kill him, Iran. I'm sure that if he were to change his mind, he could have taken it himself. So that the imam, of course, has to be willing to sacrifice. The leaders have to be willing to sacrifice. So the followers also have to be willing to sacrifice. The next thing that they have to be is sincere. That you can't be insincere as a leadership, because the thing is that the Shias are supposed to be the leaders of the Muslim community. That all of the Muslims are Muslims. All of them are our brothers. All of them are our communities. But we're supposed to be the leaders, that that we go over and we're the flag bearers. That we go, like, that the Prophet sends out his best soldiers first. The ones who believe, the ones who are gonna go all the way. The other people get dragged along. That we go out and we're willing to die for this. That we're willing to sacrifice for this. That we believe in it. That we're willing to fight for the last drop of the sunnah. That there's one thing, like, for instance, let's say one person, like, there, we've accomplished all of our goals, but people, they decided that, you know, there's one thing that we want, which is that we're going to put one bid'ah in Islam, that instead of going into the bathroom with your left foot, we're going to go in with our right foot. But we'll give you everything else. We should say no. We're willing to die for that last sunnah. You're like, it's not even wajib, it's mustahab, makruh, leave it alone. We should be willing to die for that one. That we have to be, as Shias, we have to be the followers of the Imam. That they brought Imam Ali a bowl in a battle, and it was broken, and he was like, no, take it. And they were like, why are you fighting? It's a battle. You can forget about this. Put it on, do it some other time. It's like, that's the whole point of it. There isn't big and small. All of it's the same. We're trying to establish a principle, which is that, the principle is that God's rules are on earth. That this is the highest goal. That oppression is one of them. Justice is one of them. But God's rules on earth, every single last one. down to the last penny. We're not going to stop until we've accomplished all of them. When you have that thing, that there isn't there. To me, I think that the Shias shouldn't really make it, for instance, amongst themselves, yeah, you can have leaders and followers, but you should take that you as Shias are leaders of the Muslim Ummah. That you claim that you're followers of the Ahlul Bayt. Because everyone says that they're lovers of the Ahlul Bayt. But are you followers of the Ahlul Bayt? That's what Shia is. Lovers of everybody. It's like we all love the Ahlul Bayt. And we criticize the other people. We say, how can you say you love the Ahlul Bayt but you don't follow their fiqh? How can you say you love the Ahlul Bayt and you don't follow their aqaid? Well, how can you say you love the Ahlul Bayt and you don't follow their sunnah? Was their sunnah to sit around and be punching bags? Or was their sunnah to lead the other people? That each one of us, if we have knowledge, then we have a responsibility. That if we're like the rest of the people, the only difference is we put our hands down when we pray, then we're not really doing anything. They don't follow them, they just love them and don't follow their fiqh or aqaid or their seerah. And we follow their fiqh and their aqaid, but we don't follow their seerah. We haven't really accomplished much. We haven't distinguished ourselves. So we have to do that. We have to take it to that next step. That we follow their fiqh, we follow their aqaid, and we follow their way. That we do what they did. We accomplish what they did. We find out what their goals are, and we do those things. Not just that we just... Because all of these things are supposed to be leading us somewhere. In our own personal lives, and they're supposed to be leading us somewhere in the hereafter. That we accomplish a particular goal. We're supposed to accomplish that on earth. That Allah made the men His representative on earth. Yes, Prophet Adam is the particular representative, or yes, the Imam is the particular representative, but all of us in general are the representative. All of us are supposed to establish those goals. And that we have to take it seriously. If I've seen sometimes in sports, sometimes there's two teams are playing like basketball or something. I like basketball. Sometimes I've seen two teams are playing. And one of them is serious. They really want to win. The next team, they might be better sometimes, but they just don't have the fire. The team with the fire will win. And that if we take, but so that means if we want to have change, and we should want this. That's another thing. I don't think a lot of people think they're, yeah, we're Shia, mashallah, alhamdulillah, we're Shia, we do matan and stuff like that. Everybody, that's good. Now, I'm not saying anybody in particular, don't anybody think that I'm giving this speech to you, that you're a fake Shia. No, everybody here, alhamdulillah, we're all real Shias. But I sometimes get the feeling that they don't really want change. They don't really want the world to be a better place. No, you should want the world to be a better place and then take it as my personal responsibility to make the world a better place. That it's not a job for somebody else. You should want that job. I'm not going to rest. I'm not going to be put into the ground until I've made a little bit of the world, even if it's just the 2 inches or, a few square feet that I stand in. Unless that's a better place, I'm not happy. I'm going to make something happen. I'm going to bring some sort of change to the world around me. I'm going to have some sort of islah, even if it's just me. Because you control yourself. Because, okay, I can't do islah of this person. I can't do islah of that person. But who here can't change themselves? Who here can't change their wife? Who here can't change their child? Who here can't change their husband? Maybe you can change yourself. I can't change my wife. I can't change my husband. I can't change my children. They don't listen to me. But you can. You can find out. You can go and find out which part of the sunnah in my life am I not practicing and do it. So that's one of the things you have to do. And you have to have sacrifice. You have to have selflessness. Change is hard. It's hard. If you ever try to change yourself, you realize that changing the world is hard. Because when you try to change yourself, even if it's something small, you say, you know what, from now on, I'm going to get up just a little bit before Fajr and I'm going to pray, two rakats. When you realize that that's hard, then you realize, then also you'll be more forgiving to other people. When other people are bad and stuff, you say, okay, they're trying, they're still on the way, they're keeping up the struggle. So, that's the thing, the next thing that it needs, is it has change. That you have to have sacrifice, you have to have selflessness, and the next thing you have to have is patience. Sometimes you have to keep trying Because patience isn't in the meaning of we sit and wait. No. I mean, you have to keep trying, and then you see the result. That you have to be willing to suffer. You have to be willing to go through a lot. That it's not always easy. Another thing you have to have is humility. Why do you think that is? If you're not humble, first of all, you won't realize anything's wrong. If you're not humble, you think you're better. Think that that's as soon as that happens, it's over. As soon as you're better than everybody else, as soon as you don't have anything to look up for, you don't have anything to struggle for, you don't have anything to strive for, because you know I've reached alhamdulillah, I've reached my goal. Now I'm a sheikh. There's nothing more to learn. But if you look up, you say, oh well, I have studied a couple of years, but there's a lot of people that studied a lot more than me. I've studied a couple of years, but there's a lot of people that studied a lot better than me. Then you realize, oh, maybe I do have a little teeny tiny bit of work to do. But that's how all of us should be, that we should realize that, no, I have work to do. I'm not where I am supposed to be. You should keep working on yourself every day. If you do that, you start to realize that you're not that great of a person and that there is a lot you can do. That even if you just start with yourself and make yourself a better person, you'll have helped the world a lot. That's what all of us have to realize, that it's a struggle. We make mistakes, we fall down, and we have to keep trying. We can't give up. And that we have to be patient with ourselves, and we have to be patient with the other people, and we have to keep working. You shouldn't be happy with yourself. When you read the du'as of the imams and stuff, you can realize they weren't happy with themselves, and they also weren't arrogant. That if Allah wanted someone to be arrogant, He would have the imams be arrogant. But the imams weren't arrogant, so how can we be arrogant? And we're not anywhere close to them. We're not in the same ballpark. I don't know which, maybe not even the same sport. So we have to keep working, and maybe we can work and work and work and work and work. We get in the same sport. That, for instance, yeah, they're playing baseball on the higher levels, and we're playing, you know, Pee Wee League. Maybe after, you know, hard work, we can get there. But you should keep up hope. Don't say it's impossible. Keep trying. You don't know where you'll reach. So then, that we have to have is humility. We have to establish that principle in ourselves. We can't think. The first thing is that I'm not better than anybody, and any other person has an excuse for what they do, but I don't have any excuse for what I did. That's like an important part of it. If you look at somebody else and he's doing something wrong, you know, maybe his father and mother beat him up, maybe he's crazy, maybe he's retarded, maybe, I don't know, maybe he had a hard time, maybe he had a struggle, maybe he didn't know. You see someone else do something wrong. But when you do something wrong, don't give yourself an excuse. I knew better. I could have tried harder. I could have struggled. I could have learned. Don't give yourself that same excuse. Don't make up things for between you. Don't say, no, I'm a good person, but I don't fast. I'm a good person, but I don't, you know, but I eat pork. I'm a good, no. I'm a bad person and I do these things. And if I try, maybe I can be a good person. But the other people know they have an excuse. They don't know. So with yourself, don't give yourself an excuse. With other people, give them that excuse. Also, we should look and we should see that when people apply these principles of Imam Hussein, what happened to them? We have examples in our time, alhamdulillah, most of us have been able to see. This happened when I was a little kid, but I've read about it, which is the revolution in Iran, which is they applied the principle, first of all, of leadership and shahada amongst their leaders, that the highest people were willing to go all the way. And they gave up countless leaders from amongst their people. They put sacrifice in. They put work in. They were steadfast. They were humble. They kept trying. They kept going. They didn't get afraid. They didn't back down. They were unified. And then they were able to bring about some degree of change. It wasn't perfect. Nobody says it's perfect. But they were able to bring about a great change in their country by applying those principles. And that when other people tried to do the same thing, but they lacked any one of those things, then they weren't able to bring about that universal change. They weren't able to bring the light to everyone. Sometimes just arrogance could do it. Sometimes just self-righteousness could do it. I think I'm better than everybody else. Then the other people tried that. They would end up in, we had other brothers in some countries. They would try and bring, instead of purifying themselves, they would go and try and purify the other people first. And they would end up like attacking like these like hotels and nightclubs and killing the people there. It just seemed like maniacs. But if you work on yourself first and you become a better person, then you draw people to you. You don't have to murder people and then make them. They would attack tourist hotspots. They did that not too recently in some of these countries, to go over and put a bomb in a tourist spot. That doesn't really help anybody. You aren't better. And also it just shows a certain degree of arrogance. You didn't forgive them. You didn't try to work on them. You didn't try to explain to them. No, you're just going to go and kill them. But if you work on yourself, then you start to realize other people have excuses, because you want to make excuses for yourself. The next example that we have is in Lebanon, that when the people applied these principles, they would give their lives, they would give their money, they would give their wealth, they would give their heart, they would be aware of what was going on. They would resist. Because resistance sometimes is with your hands, sometimes it's with your mind. But the main thing is that you're resisting, and you have that concept that I'll resist with whatever means I have at my disposal. That not just that I'm going to isolate, resist. Some people want to be like, oh, I'm an intellectual, and then I'm going to resist, you know, intellectually. Good, but don't isolate resistance to that. Don't tell other people you can't resist in other ways. No, everybody has to resist that. We're not going to let this oppression continue. Also, oppression has to bother you. I think I might have missed that. Oppression itself as a concept has to bother you. Any sort of oppression. Not just oppression with a physical kind. Mental oppression. Oppressing, it should bother you when other people oppress themselves. When other people miss their salats, that should bother you. When other people, it should all bother you, because any sort of disobeying Allah should bother you. Not just the big and the small. Not just, well, you know, if people do this one, it bothers me, but if it doesn't do that one, it bothers me. And also, when people oppress me or do something bad to me, it bothers me more than when they disobey Allah. I've seen some people do that. If somebody steals from them, it bothers them. If they steal from somebody else, it doesn't bother them. So you can't have that concept. They have to be against all oppression. And when they did that, then they were able to be victorious. And then also, this type of thing also makes the oppressor afraid, because he realizes if I mess with one, I mess with them all. I mess with one Muslim, I mess with all of the Muslims. I mess with one person, then I mess with them all. That the Muslims are all brothers and they all stand up together. That sort of thing, that ends the oppression of the oppressor. And we saw that in Lebanon, that when they stood up for other people, then they were able to get this great victory, and they were able to free their own land and also put pressure on the oppressors. And if you don't follow the imam's way, then you also, that's another good, the reverse of that. When you see that some people, they didn't follow the imam's way. Because you have the example of the people who followed, and you have the example of the people who didn't follow. You have the example of the people who didn't follow the imam's way now, and you have the example of the people who didn't follow the imam's way in the past. That the people of Kufa called the imam, and then they killed him. That shows that, for instance, that they realized the concept that we need an imam. They realized the concept that oppression is wrong. They realized the first part, but they weren't unified. They weren't fearless. They weren't patient. And they weren't willing to make sacrifice. So on the other hand, one hand, you had the imam who was willing to make that sacrifice, and then you had the people who weren't. And then that turned out to be a disaster to them, and they went down in history as traitors. It's like a horrible stigma that went down for that people. That when you're greedy, when you're fearful, and when you just don't have any sense. That when you let people run you amok. That when you let people go over and give you some fake leader and you believe in that leader as if he's a real leader. You've seen people like this sometimes in the world. Somebody gives them some fake leader, and then they go over and fight and stuff like that for this clown as if they should fight for an imam. But then they don't fight for their real imam. And we have that Imam Hussein, this is what he was trying to tell the people when they were trying to kill him. He told them, O servants of Allah, be wary of this world. For if this world were to remain for anyone, it would remain for the prophets. They were the most deserving and highest in divine pleasure and decree. Rather, surely Allah has created this world for trials, and created its people for mortality. And its old gets new, and its blessings get bitter, and its happiness become gloomy, and its places become intolerant, and its houses are disappearing. So arm yourself. And the best armament is piety. Be pious to Allah, and then you'll be successful. And Imam Hussein was telling them this as they were killing him, that he was still trying to guide them, knowing that, for instance, even if these people killed him, perhaps his words might reach the next generation after that. That he was still trying to guide these people from the darkness into the light. That show that we're going to make this change. We're going to make this happen. And if it just takes a drop of my blood and it takes our family's blood, we're willing to make these sacrifices for the greater good of humanity and to stand up for the cause of Allah. So, Imam Hussein was there on this battlefield after his friends and family had been killed around him. And he was still trying to call people to get them, that even if he could get a few people, this is the thing that's also, that I think a lot of times, sometimes we forget, that even just getting one person is worthwhile. If you can get one person to realize that he's wrong and to change his ways, if you can affect that person's heart, it's worthwhile to do that and to try. Affect yourself if you can. And if you can affect one other person, then do it. So our Imam was still standing there, even while the people were showering arrows on him, even while the people were trying to kill him, even while the people were harassing his women, he's still trying to call them to the right way, still making speeches, even while he was fighting. So he would stand up, and after he had lost his friends, after he had lost his companions, after he had lost his family members, and he would go, he would give his goodbye to his family, and he would march out into the battlefield, and he would fight, he would kill his enemies, and then he would come back. And they would see him again, and they would wave to him, and he would give his salams again, and he would turn around, this time a little bit more tired, and go out, and he would fight and battle again in the cause of Allah, kill some more of the people. The most unjust from amongst them would come out first, of course. These people who didn't have the presence of mind, at least to avoid killing Imam Hussein, the son of the Prophet. And they would fight him. And he was supposed to be their prophet, and they would call him in their adhan, and they didn't have the sense to realize that, I call this prophet in my adhan. When I say, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad, I'm talking about Imam Hussein and his family. And they were still fighting them and killing them. This shows when you don't have the political awareness in what you do. They would fight him, and they would call. He was calling them to the Jannah, and they were trying to call him to Nar, and he was fighting them. He would kill them, and he would send his, and then he would return. He would get more tired. He would come back out, and each time this should have been pulling at their heartstrings. That what are we doing? That this man is a sign of Allah. That this is something beautiful. That if you ask anybody and they saw something like that, if you saw somebody that brave now, standing up in the street and fighting 100 people, you would be like, wow. That we all root for that type of thing when we see that. When you see somebody doing something brave, that's one characteristic that all human beings like. Even if it's wrong, even if he's in the wrong cause, but because he's so he has conviction and bravery are beautiful traits in a human being. When he stands up and he's like, no, I'm not going to give up. I don't care how many of them they are. I have to stand up for my principle. I don't care what I have to sacrifice. I'm not going to be afraid. And that he goes out and he stands there and he fights and then he wins. And you see that. It should move you. But it didn't move those people. That you see an imam, you see a brave person fighting, battling for his life. Just the concept of that. That someone, he doesn't care, that he's gone past that. That it's as if he's already in heaven. And it didn't move those people. And they fought him. They shot him with arrows. They threw stones at him. But he wouldn't go down. He wouldn't die. But he would come back. And he was fighting like a lion. He would have arrows in his arms. He would have arrows in his face. He would be hit, but he would keep going. He would stay on his horse. He would drive his enemies back. They would try to fight him sometimes one at a time. That was certain death. They would try to fight him 10 at a time. That was certain death. But he would return. He would come back to his camp. He would give his salams to his women and children who were watching this. And they were getting this message that we aren't going to give up. That this is a religion. We say la ilaha illallah, and we mean it when we say it. That we are Ahlul Bayt Nabuwa. That we are the companions. We are the wives and we are the children of the companions of the Prophet. And we're never going to give up. And then our Imam was showing us that in action. He was showing us that not in a course of 23 years. He was showing us that in one day. That I'm going to keep going. And this is patience. That he would go out, he would ride out on his horse. And he would come. And someone would try to challenge him. He would call out. He would tell them who he was. He would say, I'm Hussein ibn Ali. I'm the son of the Prophet. I'm the son of Fatima. And I am here. Does any one of you, or any one of you want to go to heaven? You can go to heaven by giving me a drink of water. Or you can go to hell and try to fight me. And they would come out and they would fight him. Then this Lion of Allah, finally he started to get more and more worn down. Because the thing is, he's the Lion of Allah. He has a spirit. But he's a human being in a human being's body. That you get hit by enough arrows, you get hit by enough stones. After a while, your sword gets heavy. You start to swing slower. You start to move slower. So finally, they started to shoot arrows at him. And they knocked him off his horse. And he fell to the ground. And then, like the cowards they were, instead of going to him, they went to the tents of his women. And he stood up one last time. He said, no, I'm still alive. I'm still a man. Come after me. Then they threw arrows at him and things like that, and threw stones at him and knocked him down again. But they still didn't have the bravery even to attack him one at a time. They attacked him as a group, stabbing him, kicking him, spearing him. But this was the son of the Prophet of Allah, and he wasn't dying that easily. He refused to even let himself die. He kept his spirit and kept himself together and was patient through all of this. And then finally they backed off and they realized that he was breathing his last breath. That he was sitting there bleeding. And then they decided, let's hurry up and finish this. But who was going to be the person to do that crime? Who was going to be the person to cut off the head of the son of the Prophet? Who was going to be the person to kill the miracle of Allah? Who was going to be the person to kill the camel of Saleh? Who was going to be that person to guarantee himself hellfire? And so finally, his cousin decided that he would volunteer. Shemr bin Dazhosa. And he went. And his other cousin, Omar bin Saad, who was from the same tribe, they went together and walked out to murder their own cousin, their own flesh and blood, who was the son of their prophet, who they had grown up together with. That Shimmer was Abbas's cousin. So that makes him Imam Hussein's cousin by default. Omar bin Saad was the son of Saad ibn Abu Waqqas. They had grown up together in the same town. And they had just lost their minds. So they went over together. And Shimmer decided he would have the glory of doing the horrible deed. And they murdered their Imam. Knowing who he was. Knowing that it had been predicted by the Prophet himself. After they killed him, then they decided that, no, we're not going to be satisfied with murdering the Imam. We're going to cut off his head and put it on a stick, even though the Prophet had said, don't play with the bodies of a wounded dog. And he was upset when they brought him the head of Abu Jahl. But they decided that we're going to put the head of Imam Hussein on a spear. They decided, no, we're not satisfied with that. We're not satisfied with putting his head on a spear. We're going to take his clothes from his body, even though Imam Ali wouldn't take the clothes from the dead body so that people could see. They said, no, we're going to take Imam Hussein, the son of the Prophet of Allah, we're going to take his clothes from his body. And you would think this is enough, that you killed him, you left him naked, you murdered him in front of his wife and children. They said, no, we have to trample him with horses. Who wants to volunteer for this and get a reward with Yazid? Some miserable reward. That he had just told them that whatever you get, what are you going to buy with it? If he gives you 10 dirhams, you're going to buy a loaf of bread and a few pounds of meat. But they went and trampled his body with a horse. Some of them volunteered. They weren't forced. They weren't drafted. They said, no, I'm volunteering. I want to get the money. And they went and trampled his body with the horse, then led his family behind the heads of their imam. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. Masalli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد حسين
يا حسين يا حسين يا حسين يا حسين يا حسين يا حسين يا حسين يا حسين يا حسين